Welcome to At the Table. I'm Clark Wolf, and this is the weekly radio show about all things food, brought to you from Sonoma County, not just wine country, but farm country and food country and writing about food country. This is where the legendary late MFK Fisher, a woman who used the initials MFK so that the editor that she was going to see wouldn't know she was a woman until she got there, because it was tough in those days. And in her spirit, in her memory, and towards her legacy, the legacy that she left at Last House at the Bouverie Preserve, that is now maintained by the Audubon Canyon Ranch in Glen Ellyn, California, the house where she lived and wrote the last 20 years of her life. We have just run something that I've been talking about a lot, which is an emerging writers contest. And today we're going to begin our conversation with one of the judges for that wonderful contest. She is an award-winning and best-selling author, writer, editor, and filmmaker. I mean, Ruth Reichel has done and continues to do so many wonderful things that have to do with food and life. Welcome back to At the Table, Ruth.
It's a pleasure to talk to you again.
You know, you were part of the inspiration for this contest, because when you were the editor of Gourmet Magazine in that legendary decade, you had an insert of great writers. Tell us a little bit about how you see writing and writing about food emerging in the last, 20 or 30 years as really at the forefront of what we consider to be good writing.
You know, it's really interesting, because when I started writing about food, I didn't want anyone to call me a food writer. It felt pejorative. And MFK Fisher felt the same way, you know, that somehow being called a food writer was putting you down, because what food writers, most people who were food writers were kind of, you know, home ec people who wrote recipes. And the idea of someone doing serious writing that saw food in a much broader sense, that wasn't just about, oh, this is delicious, or this, you know, here's a nice way to, you know, cook a new dish, but that actually saw food for what it is, which is a window on the world and something that encompasses art and politics and sociology and history, and is really, to me, has always been an extraordinary way of depicting something important and getting people to read it. And that's what, you know, why Mary Frances Fisher was so important to me, because she really was the first great writer on food that I ever read. When I discovered her as a child, it was like finding, a kindred soul.
Yeah, no, I can imagine. And many people have said that while your voice as a writer is quite distinct and quite wonderful, that there is something in the spirit of MFK Fisher in the way you look at or approach writing. Is that something you feel comfortable agreeing with?
Yeah. I mean, when I wrote my first memoir, Tender at the Bone, I very much thought of it as being in the vein of the gastronomical me. MFK Fisher has been attacked in modern times, as I guess everybody gets attacked eventually. But I continue to think that anyone who wants to know what good food writing is only has to read her little meditation on a tangerine. Mm. And how she discovered the joy of tangerines, and to realize that she is talking about much more than food there.
Yeah. You know, as you're saying that, I'm thinking Tender at the Bone is just such a wonderful phrase on its own. And I'm sitting in my kitchen in my cabin in the woods, in the Redwoods, and behind me is a stack of books. And there are two copies of Comfort Me with Apples. Somehow the names of your memoirs, the names of your books are as comforting and as engaging as the writing inside. So your focus on supporting either emerging or established writers who are focusing on food has been something in long standing, hasn't it?
It has. And I mean, it's interesting that you bring up that little supplement we did, the reading supplement, because it is one of the proudest things I've ever done, where we were very fortunate to get the support of the Phillips Company, who wanted to give gifts to people. And they published this 100-page booklet with only 4 ads in it. And we were able to go to writers and say, you can write anything you want, but do something that a normal magazine wouldn't let you do. So, you know, we went to Calvin Trillin and Ann Patchett and, Myra Coleman. We just gave her 12 pages and said, do something fantastic. You know? People did really extraordinary things. David Rakoff wrote this fabulous piece on the relationship between Jews and bacon, which nobody else would have let him do. And, you know, it was just, it was a dream, and people loved it. So it was, to me, the sort of go-ahead moment that, okay, now our readers understand that we are going to take a very big bite of the world, and we are going to do much more than just, you know, write pretty little things. I mean, Chimamanda Adichie did a great thing about, you know, what it was like to grow up as a young girl in Africa, and brings food into it. And it was a moment, that little booklet.
Yeah, and I still have my copy somewhere packed away in New York. All right, I'm talking to Ruth Reichel. She's the award-winning and best-selling author of a number of wonderful books, including the most recent one, where she wrote about her years at Condé Nast, at Gourmet Magazine, but also many other articles. She's been an editor. She's been a restaurant critic. So, Ruth, you were kind enough to be one of the judges for the Last House Writing Contest, and we had 3 categories. An adult category, 18 and over, that 13 to 17 kind of youth category, and kind of, I guess, 7 or 8 to 11 or 12. What was your response to the submissions that we sent along as finalists?
I have to say, when you asked me to do it, I didn't expect much, and I was blown away by the quality of the writing and the reach of the writers. But more than anything, I mean, this poem that I believe we gave it, you know, it was in the youngest group. It is this extraordinary poem written by an eighth grader that, you know, I would have been proud to have written. I mean, it's just astonishing. I mean, it's a very odd thing to, you know, read a whole group of really ambitious and wonderful writing. I mean, pieces that talk about everything from, you know, growing up as an immigrant to an empty lot in Detroit. They were all really good. But this poem just took my breath away, really did.
Well, I have to tell you, we are going to have some of those people on the show today. And so thank you for starting us out. We are going to have Ruth Reed, who wrote the Love Letter to an Empty Lot, on in the next segment. She's going to talk about, actually, she has a connection to here in Sonoma County. She is married to a fellow who grew up in Santa Rosa. So there is a visceral connection. But I think what you say is right. We were hoping to have 5 or 6 finalists and make it really easy for the judges. And it was all we could do to hone it down to 8 finalists for the adult submission section. I mean, it was really, and so I think it had to do a little bit also with the way we couched it, which was in the spirit, again, of your insert. We talked about it being a way to address, and it could be an article or a story or some other form of expression, an essay. And of course, Josh Cohen decided to make it a poem, where we talked about conservation and nature and food and culture and science and how those things connect together in any way people wanted. We wanted to make it that broad range, which maybe years ago wouldn't have been possible without the kind of work that you yourself have done.
Well, you know, I have to say, I had forgotten how much I liked the middle essay, you know, this one Local Eats, which is also incredible. You know, I mean, it's about a forgotten Native American food, something that sustained an entire tribe, that is an ingenious piece of culinary wisdom because it's something that is in its natural state poisonous. And Native people learned how to make it something that was both palatable and nutritious and has completely vanished from our diets. And you read this piece about acorns and you think, damn, we've got to bring acorns back.
Yeah, and I tell you, as I'm sitting here in the woods, there is a squirrel up there in a tree throwing it down at me, you know, trying to hit me as I go down the steps to my car. All right, well, listen, Ruth, I know you're working on a documentary about what's going on in the world today in food and restaurants, and we can't wait to talk to you about that as it goes further along. But I have to say, I thank you so much for, first of all, the spirit that you give to a way of looking at things that always includes food and culture and the human experience, and a generosity of spirit which touches everything that you do. Thank you so much, and wishing you all the best.
Thank you. Happy Thanksgiving. Bye.
You too. Bye-bye. Welcome back to At the Table. I'm Clark Wolf, and we're talking today about the Last House Writers Contest. We've just been talking with Ruth Reichel, who is one of the wonderful judges who helped us gather and take a look at all these wonderful pieces, articles, a poem, essays. And so my next guest is Rachel Reed, and she wrote the award-winning adult category piece called Love Letter to an Empty Lot. Welcome to At the Table, Rachel.
Thank you so much for having me.
So tell us a little bit about where you are. It's a community that's right kind of in the middle of, in and around Detroit, Michigan, right?
Right. So I actually currently live in Hamtramck, which is a tiny little 2-square-mile town that is completely surrounded by Detroit. But until about 2 months ago, I was actually living in the city of Detroit, not too far away from where we are right now. And the house we lived in, we owned, and it was surrounded by an entire street worth, basically, of vacant lots, because there's been so much demolition in the city over the last decade or so. Our house was sort of one of only a few houses on the block, and it sort of inspired the piece, actually.
So how did you hear about this contest?
So my partner's originally from the Bay Area, and probably as a lot of people were doing in the last few months, we were sort of dreaming about where we would go soon when we could leave and do something, when we could travel again. And he mentioned, he's actually he's in school for landscape architecture, and he mentioned that this Canyon Ranch place is some place that he'd always wanted to visit, and it sounded beautiful. So I did a quick search and was looking at the website, and I saw the contest, which really piqued my interest because I've always been into, well, not always, but recently been into cooking, and I've been thinking more about the connection between cooking, food, and, like, particularly nature. So it just sounded really, like, right up my alley, and some of the judges sounded really impressive. I was very tempted, so I decided I had to enter.
Well, you wrote a beautiful piece that I'm going to talk about, we're going to talk about in a minute, but tell us a little bit about what you do. I mean, what do you do every day? What's your work? What's your background? Where are you from?
Sure, yeah. So I grew up in the suburbs of Detroit, but I've actually been living in the city of Detroit for a little bit more than a decade. I actually originally went to law school, but I decided I didn't want to be a lawyer, and today I actually work for a nonprofit health system in the city of Detroit. So we've been really busy in the last, over the last year fundraising for COVID-19 efforts and things like that. So I do actually write on a daily basis for my job. And so it was kind of cool to be associated with this contest too, because I saw this other side of fundraising from other organizations, really great, you know, Canyon Ranch being a really great organization.
I think that's kind of interesting that you put it that way. And first of all, you are a beautiful writer. I mean, it really was a pleasure to read your piece. But I love the idea that you were doing the same kind of connecting that we were trying to do on this end when we talked about how to do something in the spirit of MFK Fisher that was in support of Last House and her writing and her legacy. And Audubon Canyon Ranch was, of course, the home of Last House on the Bouverie Preserve. We wanted to make sure that we connected the spirit of all the different efforts that we're endeavoring to support. And we weren't entirely sure that everybody would understand to write about conservation, nature, culture, food, and all the rest of it and all the pieces around it. And it sounds like it was something that you not only have been thinking about, but have been experiencing in your life.
Yeah, it was actually like a perfect, it was just right up my alley because I'd just been thinking over the last few years about the connection between the natural world and how we eat. And yeah, and I thought it was actually really a quite ingenious way of, you know, this contest was a really, really cool idea of Canyon Ranch to do it. I just thought it was like a very creative fundraising idea.
Well, and you know, part of it was to further the mission, right? And sometimes in nonprofits, it's not just to do certain things. And of course, we're trying to restore the Last House because it got singed in the fires of 2017. It and the David Bouverie home were saved, but they have a lot of restoration. But we wanted to also broaden the message of Audubon Canyon Ranch and all the things that they do. I'm talking to Rachel Reed. She is in a tiny little town surrounded by Detroit. I love the image of that. She was the adult section winner with her piece Love Letter to an Empty Lot for the Last House Writing Contest. I would like to say it was for emerging food writers, but clearly in the work that you've done, you're not an emerging writer, you're a writer, but maybe emerging food writer. So tell us a little bit about, you've given us a background. How did you build this piece? What was it about an empty lot that made you want to write a love letter and that allowed you to discover how much life is going on in something that we pass by every day?
Right. Yeah, so Detroit has lost probably more than half of its population over the last half century. And in particular, over the last 10 years or so, has experienced like thousands of demolitions of residences and businesses. So there are thousands of empty parcels in the city. And in some neighborhoods, that's all you see. You don't actually see very many structures standing. So a lot of people in the city understandably associate these spaces with loss and decline. And I think me being more of an outsider from living in the city as a new resident, I don't necessarily see it as negatively because I don't have that past. And so I completely understand why people are sensitive about it. But I've been able to sort of, I don't know, living where we did, I started noticing that, you know, there were all these things surrounding us. It wasn't just an empty lot. It wasn't just dirt. There were so many plants and animals and all these great things happening right around us that people are sort of passing by. For example, our neighborhood had a pheasant family, which is really unique. I don't know if any other cities where pheasants are roaming around. So it was just kind of beautiful to be able to observe this. And that's sort of what inspired the piece. And, you know, I actually read of a study that showed that there is a healthier bee population in the city of Detroit than in the surrounding suburbs. So these kind of thoughts sort of just started brewing in my head about how there's a lot going on in these lots that people aren't noticing and that are that's actually quite beneficial to us as humans. And if we can maybe try to change our mindset, we could appreciate these spaces a little bit more and not see them as sources of loss, but rather something that is actually adding to our life.
You know, I could not agree with you more. And I think this period of time that we're all in, as strange as it is and as difficult and as challenging as it is, has so many silver linings. It's such a reminder that in what we look at and see initially as difficulty, empty lots and declining population, in fact, can have not so hidden treasures. The image of this band of intrepid pheasant marching through the inner city Detroit is just so delightful. And Rachel, I will tell you, there's a name of a blog in there somewhere. I don't know, the Detroit Pheasants or something like that. But in our last minute or so, has writing this piece and winning this changed your thinking a little bit at all?
Yeah, I mean, it's made me definitely think more about how I want my relationship with the earth to be. And it's definitely made me, it kind of gave me a sense of like appreciation for the smaller things in life, which I think as we're, you know, as you mentioned, like the silver lining in all of this situation that we've all been in over the past year is that we have to find meaning and joy in the everyday small things in life. And I think you can do that if you just look out your window.
I think you're so right. And I thank you so much for your beautiful piece and for talking with us today. Thanks so much.
Thank you.
We are back at the table and we're talking about the last house writing contest in support of the legacy, the memory, the spirit of MFK Fisher, our beloved local who wrote and lived for 20 years in Glen Ellen at Last House, at that wonderful property that was the Bouvry Preserve, part of Ottoman Canyon Ranch. And this contest has been wonderful, talking to Ruth Reichel and then talking to Rachel Reed, who won the adult section. I'm very happy to welcome back to At the Table Kennedy Golden, daughter of MFK Fisher and one of our lead judges. Kennedy, welcome back.
Thank you. It's wonderful to be here.
So we were talking to Ruth and she was honestly quite surprised. She, being a good sport, said yes to me when I asked her to be a judge, but really didn't expect the level and the range and the depth of writing. What was your reaction to the people who entered the contest and the finalists that we were struggling to choose between?
Well, it certainly was a struggle. I was absolutely impressed and amazed and pleased with every single entry and congratulate all of the writers and think that the judges did a good job of coming up with some finalists, but boy, was it hard.
It was the juxtaposition of topic, the way we offered to let them combine conservation, nature, science, food, and culture. Do you think that that posed a challenge for people to try to touch all those points, or do you think that it allowed them to write naturally about things that they already care about?
Well, I wondered about that myself, but I actually found in reading all of the submissions that they came from the heart. They were beautifully written. They touched on what was going on in people's lives and what matters in today's world.
I think you're so right, and I think that we struggled to kind of express the contest, but it doesn't seem like they struggled to respond. You've lived around and with writing all of your life. I mean, being involved in the life of a very successful and prolific writing. What does writing and reading mean to you?
Well, it means communication and connection. My mother was always a supporter of emerging writers. She mentored many people. She read works as long as she was able and then had them read to her so that she could comment and keep people writing. And she always felt that writing was something very critical to life. And I would have to agree with that. I find in my later years, I'm writing more than I ever have and reading and thoroughly enjoying it. So seeing writers, seeing a 10-year-old win the final prize, oh my goodness, that's so exciting. And having the great variety of writing samples that came in just, to me, was exhilarating.
I can't help asking, you spent many years at one of my favorite places in the entire universe. I was very lucky to have a dear friend who went to Mills College, and you worked for many years in an environment where every aspect of physical and academic, psychological, philosophical, intellectual existence was considered. Is that something that you hold with you when you read and when you write? I mean, I always found that for me, growing up in a suburb, I read in my room to get away from what was around me, the suburb of what was around me, quite frankly, until I was much later in a more appealing environment. But are all those things, those physical things, present when you think about reading and writing?
Oh, absolutely. And the 45 years that I spent at Mills College shaped my life in so many ways. And to be around young women and men and faculty who were thoroughly engaged in thinking and writing and being creative, all of those things are a piece of who I am today, and I'm deeply grateful for that.
We are talking to Kennedy Golden. She is the daughter to the late, great local, I like to think of her these days, MFK Fisher, the writer who wrote about many, many things about life in a very visceral, very human, very memorable fashion. And much of it included food, or much of the pieces that are celebrated throughout the years include aspects of food. Do you think it's easier or more acceptable for people to consider themselves a food writer these days than it was when your mother did it?
Well, I think she was on the cutting edge, and she made a big difference in how people actually are free to speak about food these days. I've been reading a lot of her pieces, and also a lot of current pieces, and seeing threads that are very common. So, yes.
I noticed that we had a fairly non-traditional mix. We had slightly more women than men on our judges panel. We had slightly more women than men submitting, and the winners were two of the three category winners were women, and the overall grand prize winner was a young man who wrote poetry. Is there anything about writing and gender that you think has evolved over the last, a few decades?
I think women are better supported now in writing than they have been through history. And I think a lot of that comes from childhood, which was part of why I was so excited to see the poem of our first prize winner. But I do think that women finally are being encouraged to write more, and younger people, men and women, boys and girls, are being encouraged to write freely, not in a structured way, but more coming from the heart. So I think that's very important.
Your mother's letters and papers are at Schlesinger at Radcliffe Harvard. Is that right?
Correct. Yes.
And so if people want to study more besides Last House and the ACR, the Audubon Canyon Ranch, there are resources through those libraries that people can go to where they can explore some of the work and some of the pieces that built your mother's legendary career?
They are available, but it's very limited access. Needless to say, during COVID, there's no access.
Right.
Even during regular times, it all goes through my mother's literary agent in New York, and together we make decisions about which people for what projects get the access.
Well, she set it up very, very well. We're very, very grateful that you continue to preserve and take care of those things. And are you hoping that we continue this contest in the future?
Absolutely. I cannot wait until next year. I don't want time to fly that fast, but I think this is a wonderful thing. And I can so see my mother sitting on her porch in Last House, Bouverie Preserve, looking at the Sonoma Valley and reading all of these submissions and smiling, knowing that people continue to write, and taking her on exciting new journeys to an empty lot in Detroit, learning more about acorns and the Miwok people. And thinking about, to quote our first prize winner, the soft swoosh between the spruce trees, whispering their sad but beautiful farewell to the rain.
I look forward to it as well. Thank you, Kennedy. Talk to you soon.
Thank you.
Wait for the music. We are back at the table, and I'm Clark Wolf, and today we're talking about the Last House Writing Contest in support of the memory, the legacy, and the last house, the home where she lived and write of M.F.K. Fisher, our local, who was world famous for her beautiful writing. Her writing about food always stood out. And today we're talking to some of the people involved in this contest. We've been talking to Ruth Reichel and Rachel Reed, who was the adult category winner, and to Kennedy Golden, who is M.F.K. Fisher's daughter. And now I'm pleased to be speaking with Natalie Sandoval. She is the winner of the youth category. And her piece was something she called Local Eats that was just mesmerizing. Thank you for joining us, and congratulations, and welcome to At the Table, Natalie.
Thank you so much for having me. I'm excited to talk to you today.
Well, so Natalie, tell me a little bit about what got you, first of all, to think about not only something that's local, but something that is practical, invisible, originally poisonous, but absolutely legendary in our community. What got you thinking about writing about acorns?
Sure. Well, I was actually reading the book Ishii, which is basically the story of a man, a Native American man, who was found living in the California wilderness in the late 1800s. And he was actually found pretty close to Sonoma, just a few hours up the road. And so that kind of got me thinking about, you know, the legacy in our own community and the food that's all around us, but no one really notices.
You couldn't be more right. How did you find out about the contest?
So I was a juniper a few years ago in the program when I was in middle school. So I had a local mentor who nominated me, and that experience was really amazing. I got to go hiking, identifying plants. And so when I heard they were having a contest, I knew I wanted to try.
Well, Juniper is a program of the Ottoman Canyon Ranch organization. Go to egret.org to find out more about it. How long were you there? And besides those wonderful walks and mentoring, what was it like? You know, how did they connect you to nature?
Mm-hmm. So I was there for about, would say, 2 or 3 years, maybe. And they basically gave us training in sort of identifying plants and animals, identifying carcasses, actually, and just how to walk the trails with a very observant eye. And it was great not only to meet the adults in the community, but also to meet the other kids who were interested. I mean, they always had great nights. They had one where they brought in little bats that you could actually hold them in their little containers. So yeah, it was an amazing experience.
Well, and what ages is that for?
Right. So I believe it's middle school, not sure if it's high school, but I'm pretty sure the system works through a lottery. So knowing someone or approaching somebody who works at Audubon Canyon Ranch or knows them, and then they can nominate you for a lottery. And if you're lucky, randomly, I think kids are picked.
Well, that's the kind of perfect. I have to ask you about your writing. I mean, is this something you do for school? Is this something you do just for pleasure? Because, I mean, your writing is clear and thoughtful and evocative. I wonder how long you've been writing like that.
Oh, well, thank you. Yes, to both school and pleasure. I'm actually writing right now for our local magazine, the Sonoma Index Tribune, our local newspaper. So, you know, I work on my analytical writing in school, and then for fun, you know, I get to enter contests like these where I can write about, you know, more prosaic things that actually, you know, interest me personally.
And is this something that you want to do as a career as you continue with your education in your life?
Well, I'm only a freshman in college, so I actually haven't picked my major yet. But in terms of career, I definitely hope it includes writing, even if, you know, it's just writing as part of the job. I want it to be a component.
Well, I think that's very wise because, in point of fact, in most careers today and always, having good writing skills, being comfortable with expressing yourself in that way, is very, very, very important. So, you admitted before we got on the air that you're at the airport, but where do you live in Sonoma County?
Okay, so I live in the city of Sonoma. I live about 2 blocks from the square, so pretty much at the dead center, yeah, of the city.
Right. Well, all right. Well, listen, we have to get you back and involved. We're hoping to continue this writing contest year after year. And hopefully by next year sometime, we'll all be able to gather at Last House and maybe do some reading and some sharing and some workshops. What's next for you for the rest of the term?
For the rest of the term, I am just working on, actually, I recently got a part-time job, so I'm working on that. Trying to get through finals, I think I'll make it. and yeah, writing whenever I have the time.
Well, listen, I'm glad you shared that with us, too, because it really is very grounding to remember that people who write aren't sitting in some ivory tower. They're living lives. They're doing jobs. They're going to school. They're, you know, washing the dishes and planting things. And in your case, possibly either collecting acorns or reading about people who know how and then what to do with them.
Yes.
Thank you definitely. So much. Congratulations. And thank you for all that you're doing. We hope we stay in touch with you.
Yes, thank you for having me on the show.
We are back at the table at our last few minutes of At the Table with Clark Wolf, and that's who I am. I am talking about the Last House Writers Contest, and we've gotten a wonderful opportunity to talk to Ruth Reichel, the legendary writer, editor, and best-selling author, and Kennedy Golden, MFK Fisher's daughter, and Rachel Reed, who won for the adult division, Natalie Sandoval, who won for the youth division. And now it is my pleasure to be talking to the young man who won not only the kids or children's division, but won the grand prize for this wonderful new contest. Welcome to At the Table, Josh.
Hello.
So congratulations. What made you decide to write a poem?
I just decided to write it because my grandma always exposed me to nature, and I just like birds.
How long have you been reading poems, poetry?
I don't know. Probably a long time.
Did you get to read the poem to your class at school?
Yeah, I did.
What did they think?
They thought it was great.
Well, that's really, really good. How long have you been writing poems?
I've been doing it on and off, for 2 or 3 years. I don't know.
That's very, very cool. And how did you hear about the contest, and how long did it take you to write this poem?
My mom actually heard about it, and then I just heard about it. So I heard about it from my mom, and then it took me, half the afternoon to write it.
Well, that's wonderful. It just came right out of you. Is this something you think you'll keep doing, writing poetry and maybe writing a little bit about nature?
Yeah, probably.
And what are you still, are you doing school by Zoom these days?
Yeah, I am.
Well, all right. I hope that you don't have too many end of the semester challenges, but I hope that when we get all through this craziness, that you'll come to Last House. Have you ever been to the Audubon Canyon Ranch? Have you ever been to Last House in Glen Ellen on the Bouverie Preserve?
No, I haven't.
Well, okay, my friend. When this is all over, you and your family are all going to be invited, when it's safe for us to do that, to see the house where MFK Fisher lived for 20 years and wrote such wonderful work. But in her spirit and in all of our hearts and minds. We thank you so much for doing what you did and for being part of this. And we wish you all the very, very, very best.
Thank you.
Have a good holiday. Take care. And thank you all for joining us right here at the table.